Hey, you. Yeah, you. Come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com. Hello, welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me today is my lovely co-host, Long Gone Lou.
Oh, yeah.
Was that a baseball reference, or is that the fact that you're always on tour?
Well, I leave on tour this Saturday, so I'll be gone for 6 weeks.
6 weeks is a long time. That is a Long Gone Lou.
Yeah, lots of mental preparation for that on my end. I know
American
that there's guys... European.
European tour.
Yeah, so we start in Frankfurt, Germany, and we end in London. I'm going to be hitting everywhere from, to be honest, it's going to be a different city every day.
Nice.
So I know we have 28 shows, and if you're curious about seeing where I'll be, if I'll be in your neighborhood or whatever, if you're listening from Europe, you can go to exhibit.com/tours, and all the information is there. But yeah, I know for sure I'm going to be hitting up Floaty while I'm out there and being like, dude, where are you? I'm excited because I'll be seeing a lot of friends. But I'll be honest, I'm very happily married. So 6 weeks out is, it's not as exciting on the leaving part. If anything, I know for me, I'm going to be treating it like the moment I land, it's like, okay, now it's the countdown. It's not the countdown to when I leave. It's the countdown to when I come back.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll miss you, kind of. Hold on. Logistically, why are we talking about this on air? What are we going to do for the podcast? Should I just go solo for 6 weeks?
No, I can send you out stuff as well. And to be honest, I'm gonna be on a tour bus. Like, we're going to have Wi-Fi and everything.
Oh, so we might line up on time.
Yeah.
You'll just have to text me constantly.
Yeah.
Or I'll give you my private link that automatically has the schedule.
Oh,
so you can sign up for times.
Sure.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. Today we have a very interesting episode. I think one that we all need. We've touched on these points many, many times, but we've never properly done an episode on this with the proper vernacular and syntax, I think is most appropriate to the audience right now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to add a few different points. So this is heavily influenced from a baseball coaching video that I saw, but then I was watching and I was like, holy crap, we need to add this to the podcast, the way that he was articulating different things. And then alongside some of the other thoughts that we've had before on different episodes, combining a bunch of different thoughts that we've had. I think this is going to be a really, really interesting episode. And we're going to talk about how to gain confidence, as a mixer. Now, there is a line between an objectively good mix and like the subjectivity within a mix, right? And so we need to talk about how there are times where our confidence is a big... Well, hold on. Let me say that again. Our current feeling of ourselves and our confidence in our speakers and our ability in our ears, in our gear, in our, you know, in our whatever it is, our templates or whatever we use, is going to change how we send out mixes, how we communicate with our clients, how we do work. I mean, that's a fair assessment to make, right, Lou? Our confidence plays a big role, a huge role as a mixer.
Not only that, but in our clients and their perception of how they feel about working with us.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Clients want someone that is trustworthy, that is stable, that is going to send us, that's going to be sending them good mixes, great mixes every single time. Like, to a certain degree, I mean, we've heard of many engineers that work for a high-level artist, right? So they do mixes for this artist or like whatever. Managers, you could say the same thing. But part of the reason why you're getting hired is to not have to be worried about. Like, managers and artists and anybody that hires a mixer loves not having to babysit the mixer. And like, yeah, it's awesome that you have no ego and that you're able to do revisions and that you're flexible with that. But it'd be awesome if we can just get it right the first time. I don't even have to think about it. Right?
Yeah.
And I think, so again, confidence has a lot to do with our mixes. I think that's fair to say. And so what we're going to talk about today is how to be confident. And so we're going to talk about something called conditional confidence, right? Which is, it's also called results-based confidence. Like if you get a mix and you get accepted with no notes, of course, that's going to feel awesome. You're going to feel really confident, right, Lou?
Yeah.
Happens all the time. Like you're like, I'm the man, I'm the woman. And then you're like, this is so awesome. It feels great. And then you might do really good. You're going to believe in your speakers. You're going to be like, oh, it must be my speakers. It must be the acoustics in my room. It might be, oh, whatever plugins that I use. Like it's going to translate to everything. That's awesome.
There's also the opposite side of that where if you get a revision note and you start to feel like shit and you're like, is it my speakers? Is it my room? Is it my headphones? Is it the plugins that I have? And it starts to spiral into this whole mess of like, yeah, conditional confidence, biggest rabbit hole everybody falls for on either side of it.
Right.
No.
See, having results-based confidence is an emotional roller coaster and there's no control. And something that I care a lot about, it's just reacting. And living your life just reacting to everything is a Buddhist form of hell. Yeah. You can't just live your life reacting to anything. There's no autonomy in reaction. There's no power or control in reaction. And again, it's hard to be trustworthy because like if your confidence is based off of how things happen to you, then who's to say that you're not going to do something bad when things are down, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of the fact of the matter is that this game, the game of mixing, the game of audio engineering, the game of music in general, will expose you, right? When you don't feel it, the game will expose you. Like if you haven't had like 5 songs in a row completely rejected with some of them not even getting any notes. Like you haven't been mixing long enough. Like if you haven't had like the worst session in your life, you haven't been audio engineering long enough. Like if you like literally haven't had gotten paid or like people say that they love what you did and then behind your back, you find out that they actually hated it and then they fired you. You haven't been mixing long enough. That hasn't happened to you, right? Yeah. What else? What's another good example of something that's like...
To be honest...
Some bullshit like that.
So everything you were saying is like things I watched interns do where they're like, I don't even know if I really like this. I'm like, is it because you're still going through the growing pains? It's all the growing pains of our industry that are being described so far. Like, I'm sorry, but if you went to a session and Pro Tools crashed on you and you couldn't figure it out and all of a sudden you're a bad engineer because software didn't work, I'm sorry, that's really bad. That's confidence in the moment that just lost over something that's not even in your control. Like, shit happens, bro. You know, like... Especially like, you know, as we mentioned, I'm leaving on tour. Like anything can happen. And the reality is you got to figure it out in the moment. Confidence is being able to stand on your feet and just realize sometimes shit happens and you keep moving forward. You know what I mean? But like a lot of people take like the little moments and yeah, man, I've chased way too many checks. And by chasing checks, I don't mean like going out there and being in DMs. You should be doing that. But what I mean is like, I'm still owed thousands of dollars collectively between like quite a few different clients. And that sucks. That shit happens. And it happens in every industry. Sometimes clients are just not that great. But sometimes you also maybe just didn't have your stuff together at the moment. And you feel like shit, but it's just confidence comes with preparation.
Right.
You know, you got to be prepared to protect yourself around these situations if these things do come up. But when it does happen, it shouldn't be the reason that you feel like shit. You know, I've had mics die on me in the middle of a session. And it's like, great, session's over. I look like a fool. You know, this looks like a maintenance issue on my end and this and that. So you start to feel a little shitty. But the reality is a lot of times people are just kind of like understanding of the situation, but you beat yourself harder over something that's not that actually big of a deal.
Right.
It's really not.
So, and then when you have that slump, right? Like the inevitable confidence slump.
Yeah.
Something happens, things don't go well, or like, right? Like,
yeah, what just is, shit goes what sideways.
Shit goes sideways. And that's going to happen. You know, you're going to pivot your career. Things are going to change. When shit goes sideways, how do you react? And that's another thing too. So we're going to talk about what is real confidence? How to create that real form of confidence and how that translates. So one thing that I want to mention is that true confidence isn't like avoiding slumps. It's not that you don't get unlucky. It's not that you don't get tested. It's that the tests and the unluckiness and the bad experiences with clients don't reflect, like it's not personal, right? And it's also, there's also something to be said. It's like, it doesn't necessarily make it less scary. I'm going to use a word that I like to use a lot in the secular sense is like faith, right? Mm-hmm. Is like knowing that even if you did like 5 projects in a row and they were all heavily rejected and like the average person would question themselves. To a certain degree, faith looks like delusion. Except the difference is the delusion would say that I'm not good. Those people are crazy. They're wrong. Whereas faith would be like, I had 5 bad projects back to back. But I know I'm doing things right. And it hurts. And it's scary. And I'm not sure. There is no certainty. Although I really think that I'm doing everything that I can to do things right. The next, like my win is going to come. It is inevitable. Right? It's just a matter of time. Delusion, yep, like rejects any sort of option to have any sort of like form of improvement. There's a big difference, but it looks similar on the outside. With that, if you don't look into a person's thoughts, faith looks like delusion. Delusion can look like faith. And it's difficult to get things wrong. And it's like even the person experiencing both one of those feelings may not know themselves. But I'm going to tell you right now, it's not delusion, it's faith if you keep moving in spite of fear. Yeah. Right? It's kind of sort of the same thing as like the story of like courage. Courage isn't the absence of fear. It's doing it in the face of it. It's the same exact thing. So yeah. I want to be clear about that. So what is, so how do we move from results-based confidence or conditional confidence to real confidence? And the number one answer is preparation. Preparation has nothing to do with results, right? With the preparation, like that's not for us. What does that mean for us, Lou? How does what are some ways that like a mixer prepares?
Okay.
Because, I mean, for baseball, it's obvious. You practice. Yeah.
But, right? When it comes to a mixer, now, there's a couple ways you can prepare. And I want to separate them because they're different departments of each other. For instance, you can prepare your professional output, you know? For instance, like, actually having a proper email header, lines of communication, how do you transfer files, and having consistency behind that so that when they do see you, even if you are getting revisions, you have a consistent form of communication that is expected. And so you have a very professional output. So even if the mix gets rejected, you have something that's so consistent that it's part of you, it's your brand, and they know to expect this every time. And so that builds a little more confidence on the end of the client by you just having these little things prepared. And another way you can do it is, honestly, if you're early on in your career or shit, to be honest, I've been thinking about doing this lately, is just offer a couple free sessions, things like that. Early in your career, offer a ton and just get the word out about yourself and just do some really cool things. Because a lot of people at early stages of their career probably don't have the best experiences, and you can be one of their better experiences the more you actually put your foot forward and get some work under you know, like get those elbows greased up and everything and be like, okay, I haven't used this EQ, but I'm working with this group this weekend. I'm just going to use this EQ. Fuck it. I'm going to use this preamp. I'm going to try this new technique. I'm going to try this. And once you start finding the things you like, you start building that like engineering side of confidence. And then lastly, honestly, just, I know everybody wants to like practice on, what is it? I forget what college it is that gives you stems.
Is it Boston or Berkeley? Massachusetts.
But those are great to practice like new techniques and try them in
Cambridge.
Cambridge, Massachusetts, right?
Yeah, Cambridge Music Technology.
So
Cambridge-MT.com has
they have some great tracks, but the issue with those is that they already sound great. And you're just kind of playing with mixing, whether that's learning to automate, trying different plugins, whatever. But sometimes you just got to record. And even if it sounds like shit, trying to make things that sound like shit sound good. Because I'll never forget the day you told me, which is like such a relatable thought. We were like, dude, I was given a mix to mix, you know, that everything already was recorded really well, where like I'm used to having to like make shitty things sound good. But at this point, it's like, I don't want to do as much by a long shot. And that's something where like confidence is sometimes getting outside of your comfort zone too, where it's like, okay, shit, I'm used to recording these garage bands, but now I'm going into a big studio with big gear, big mics, quality artists with quality producers. Like all the shit that I normally had to fix is not in the room. You know, like, and knowing how to move in those situations. So adapting to different situations. So you can practice on those Cambridge tracks, but just get in the room with as many people as you can. You're going to fuck it up at some point, but just kind of move with it. You know what I mean? Like, if everybody in the room knows that you're kind of on the come up anyways, they give you a lot more leeway than if you're expected to be this professional. If you present yourself as this super confident professional, and you're still fucking things up, like that's gonna happen. But if you do it really, really, really often, then it gets harder to move forward. So take on as many locals, as many low gigs and all that early on, and just get used to being in a different room every single day with a different set of people and learning to move and adapt on the fly. You get really confident once you have your fundamentals down.
I really liked your answer because I was just going to say experience and then go into what you went into, which is a diversity of experience.
Yeah.
Right? Like fucking things up, messing things up, making mistakes, making lots
knowing
of
that
mistakes.
You're going to.
Right. And then learning from them, right?
Yeah.
You also mentioned something that I wasn't going to mention that I think is really, really important, mm-hmm. which is having systems down from receiving files, sending out files and invoices, communicating with clients. Even mm-hmm. something small, like an email, you said an email header or like an email signature.
Yeah, like I have a template on mine where it says ready for listening. You just click that little box, you change the hyperlink on it and you're done. Send it off. Everything right. else is pre-typed and it says everything that I would usually communicate. Hey, if you have notes on the mix, go ahead and hit the comment section on this and that, blah, blah, blah. If you need information on that, here's a link to a YouTube video that I have explaining how to do it and blah, blah, blah. And so, bam, send that off, done.
Well, hold on. I'm going to ask this on air. Can you send that to me so I can look at it? So I would love to see that later.
Yeah.
But yeah, systems, routine, you even mentioned brand, like the perception.
Perception which is of important. Professionalism. Yeah.
Right. Again, it's part of that consistency thing as well. And that mm-hmm. that takes a little bit more time, but it is a conscious, it should be a conscious decision to build your brand. We've talked about this.
You could do it in an afternoon to a week, however long you want to take on it.
Right. But the brand thing is interesting because we've talked about it before with the consensus being that you're making and creating a brand regardless of whether you do it on purpose. So do it on purpose.
Yeah.
Right. Be professional, intentionally professional. Try to present. I'm not saying being fake and lying, but even the beginner that's just started audio engineering, like if you had, nobody's going to look at your website. Like very few people are going to look at it, but having it, making it, taking the time to make it look nice, like talking to other seasoned engineers to ask them how their workflows are. What do you send out? How do you send out files? Do you use Dropbox? Like how do you communicate with clients? Like these more intimate questions, it's not just through experience, but you can also ask around for these sort of things. I really like that you added that because that part of the preparation is going to directly translate to how you feel. Like, and you're going to remove the ambiguous and unknowable variables, right? If you've done, because there's something that's going to be like, if you've prepared, you've done every step of a proven process right, and just this one part, the mixing part, didn't go well, then you know that like, okay, I'm good. we're going to keep going. It's not the system. It's me, right? Or is this the one song or this client or just in gel at one time? I really, really love that, that you added that. Another thing that I want to ask too, like same thing with the Massachusetts stems or anything like that. I'm probably in this new space, I'm probably going to start, I'm saying it out loud. I'm going to commit to building a website and a service where you can have stems. I'm going to like sell practice stems for real cheap or have access to stems for real cheap and some sort of like feedback. I need to actually like write down how we're going to do this, but have some sort of like feedback system, not just get the stems, but also get feedback from the mixes, like kind of like a pretending that I'm a client or whatever. Mm-hmm. We need to figure that out. But I will be honest, like it's not just about with practice. There is some, I'm going to contradict myself here a little bit.
Sure.
As much as those stems are really, really awesome, and you talked about that, they already sound good. I think that like having stems that already sound good is another form of practice, right? Just as much as like polishing a turd is another form of practice.
Yeah.
Because I mean, at our level, it's a lot of, we get a lot of great stems and knowing how to take great stems and make them slightly better or like happy with the clients is another skill separate from polishing a turd, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I will say there's something about the practice, the preparation, like you can't negate experience. It's not just, and that's the thing that you ended on, Lou, wasn't just mm-hmm. systems, brand, routine. It's also experience, like making the mistakes, having done lots of clients in lots of different genres, being recording, having done recording and mixing and mastering, having done live sound, having done orchestras, having done lots of drum kits. And then you get into
to adapt.
Right. And then even then, there's also something like having worked in high stress environments, right? Like we've talked about this in the past. Like if you were to like, in your mind right now, if you were put into the room with who's like a super huge artist, like
you can say Billie Kalani. Eilish,
If Kalani or Billie Eilish like hired you right now, could you perform at the best of your ability confidently? Right. I think it's fair to say that it takes some practice and some experience of working in high stress situations. Like that's another form of preparation. It's like having been in the room with other people, high stress situations. So like that is something that you need to think about. I will say like in baseball terms, we're gonna like, this is something that I think is kind of relatable and, but also a little bit different in our world. In baseball terms, the greatest hitters in the world mess it up 70% of the time. Like they cannot get on base 70% of the time. Right. And so it's like in the way that this coaching video worded it, which I really liked, is like, are you in a position now that you can fail 70% of the times that you go at bat or the projects that you work on and still feel good about yourself? Like, can you fail 70% of the time and still feel good about yourself? I think failing 70% of the time as a mixer is kind of actually insane. And I don't know if it'll breed success in your future or word of mouth opportunities in your future. But at the same time, I think like the concept is there. Like, can you be rejected 70% of the time and still like feel like you got it? Right. And again, there is a difference between delusion and confidence, what we're talking about right now. There are still going to be moments where it's like, it's scary. You don't know, right? But you got to do what you can. Can you still feel good? This is kind of like a stolen idea, stolen quote from Atomic Habits, but you will fall to the level of your preparation.
Yeah.
That's just an inevitable part of it.
Dude, I'm not going to lie. There's a level of preparation I'm going through right now with like, 6 weeks away, I can't take any more gear than I'm taking with me. But overpacking is also not super viable because if my checked luggage and all that starts going overweight and all that kind of stuff, one, I'm going to be charged more. Two, I'm just going to be carrying around gear I don't need. Like, I'm not taking my Strauss with me. I wish I could, but I'm not going to. But like, we're talking about like, I'm bringing like drum mics, drum triggers and all that kind of stuff. I'm bringing shotgun mics, extra in-ears and all that kind of stuff. And that's great. But I've seen dudes that just kind of show up to the show with like exactly what they were requested And then the one moment they need one more thing, can't make it happen. Can't do anything. You go to a session, you didn't bring your extra hard drive to transfer files because you're like, I'll just email them. But like the Wi-Fi goes down. Like the session can still run, but now you have no way of emailing the files over. You should have just taken a drive with you. You know, it's basic things. I know they have an iLock at the studio and they probably have auto-tune, but you show up and you know what? They were on a subscription. The subscription's not active right now. And now there's no auto-tune for the session because you didn't bring your iLock with you. It's the little things of preparation that can make the biggest difference.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is where I'm going to inject my own thoughts that I've kind of surface level explained a little bit. Now I think it's better with this context, is that another way to practice preparation in a world and an industry that is very emotional, that's very social. It's about meeting people. It's mostly word of mouth. It's about having trust in something when, you know, the next project is, if it's the world of art. Right. So oftentimes we're trying to create something that has never been done before, at least in the way that we're trying to make it.
Totally.
And like, that doesn't, like, no matter how good your portfolio is, like, if they're trying to make something completely unrelated or new or never been done before, your portfolio kind of goes out the window to a certain degree. But there is something that will stick with you, that will make you be stay confident and emotionally stable. And that is, having a clear conscience. And so, and I mean that in the sense of like, I'm not talking about like practicing mixing, but like practice being a good person to your friends, to your family, to yourself. Like practice altruism, service to others, service to community. Like practice making it not about you, but beyond yourself. I think it also means like, clearing your conscience is like, if you're doing something that is actively hurting your self-conscience, right? And it could be as deep as a pornography is addiction, or it can be as something as shallow as like, I just like to steal every once in a while, you know? It doesn't matter. Like if there's something hurting your, like hurting your self-conscience, your conscience, you need to get rid of it. It will, in very, very small, subtle and indirect ways, play a role with your self-presented and self-feeling confidence, especially towards the clients. It will play a role. Because again, it's not, what we're doing is not a confidence in some sort of like set routine thing. It's not just routine. There is an emotional human communication aspect. So when you talk to someone that you perceive to be in a higher social class than yourself, aka a client that's doing really well in the commercial world, but you, like in the back of your mind, feel like I'm a shitty person. I'm not good. I don't deserve to be here. And sometimes that's not a skill-based thing. Sometimes that is like current vices that I have that I haven't dealt with, right? Mm-hmm. That will affect your perception. That will affect how you look your clients in the eye, how you interact. Even the idea of like those that haven't figured themselves out yet, right? May want to inject themselves into the story every single time when we're actually there for the client, but they can't help but tell their own story, this needing for validation or injecting themselves into the story. Like being able to pull back, not removing the need to inject yourself in everything. These are all things that I've struggled with. We've all struggled with. We'll continue to struggle with. But I really, really, really believe in this as like an esoteric concept that I think has much more to do with how we are perceived and how we present ourselves than we realize. Like I'm not talking about standing clean in front of God. I'm not talking about that. This isn't some sort of faith-based thing. I'm talking about the psychological effects of having vices that you feel guilty about. Because we all have like stuff that we do that we don't feel guilty about. Like a lot of people in this, like listening to this podcast, don't make their bed and they don't give a crap about it. There are also people that are listening right now that don't make their bed and they feel guilty about it. Like that's something that's like, so doesn't matter, right? It doesn't matter if you make your bed or not. But it does matter if you think it matters, right? And there is, okay, the exception to this is like mental health issues. Like if you have OCD or schizophrenia of some way where it's like you have to like tap the wall 8 times in order to feel good about yourself. That's different. We're talking about like the average conscience of the average person, which is most people. Like, do what it takes to clear your conscience and it'll naturally add to your confidence. I really believe that. And I think it's like a bigger deal and in a bigger way than like we are willing to accept. So that's the one thing that I want to add. Another thing that I want to add here is going to come after this next section, which is what do confident mixers, audio engineers look like? And I will say that—
Like you and me.
Yeah, they look like you and like Mexican with facial hair.
More Mexican than Japanese.
Yeah. No, but they're not loud. They're not flashy.
No, to right? be honest, a lot of the most successful engineers that I know are the same. Oh, man. They're steady, but like when we talk aesthetics, like everybody has a genre aesthetic, I think, like the genres that were around. You know what I mean? Like if you do a lot of pop, you kind of just dress casual. If you do hip hop, you probably wear like clothing that kind of matches the aesthetic. But I'll be honest, most of us just look like regular fucking people. I hate to say it. We might think we look cool at a certain extent, but I'm sorry. Most of us just wear a plain black shirt, maybe some jeans, maybe some shorts. Like there's this kind of like unfortunately accurate, like some of us in the studio side of things, like I've got some friends that dress really well. They have really good aesthetics and everything. And great. But I hate to coin it or not coin it, but check it right now. But me and DK are just wearing black shirts right now. Like we're just everyday.
Yeah, I usually wear
a
white shirt and jeans. But yeah. Today
he's just like, let me tap into my inner Lou and just go black. You know,
in fact,
for my tour, the whole tour, every single shirt is black, and not because it's like tech black or whatever. It's just, if you know me, it's always black.
Dude, yeah, 90% of my closet is just plain white t-shirts with high quality cotton. I will say though, I wasn't that's funny that you went that direction. I meant presentation, like how do they look like emotionally?
No, I'm just saying,
the clothing,
like, listen,
is
man,
a
if
funny
you
thing
think
too.
If you think clothing makes the man, you're fucking stupid.
Right. But I mean, there is something.
I think it's good to dress yourself well. I think it's a good thing to take care of yourself, but.
Right. Right. Taking care of yourself is one thing. And I wasn't saying not flashy as in clothing that you wear. I was saying not flashy
metaphorically.
As in like, for example, like someone that feels the need to constantly tell everyone about their achievements. About how great I am. I'm an incredible engineer.
You should work with me.
I've got this many awards and I've worked with these clients. Like that is a unspoken red flag in the LA industry, which unfortunately—
No, it's very spoken.
It is very spoken. But like anybody that introduces themselves and introduces themselves with their credits, right? For example, is a huge red flag. Like that immediately goes into, this guy doesn't work regularly in the industry. Those who work regularly at a high level, like it is very obvious. There's no need to speak about your credits. Your work speaks for itself.
And I think there's one passable time, because I was talking about this. I was hanging out with our friend Diane DB yesterday. Me, DB, and Anna went to go get dinner, and Diane and Anna went to go see a concert at SoFi. They were asking the question of like, you know, is it weird to say that like you ended up in the space because it came in through work, you know, like it feels like gloating. It feels like this and that. I'm like, I think the realm where it's acceptable as somebody who knows about the red flag in our industry of how we interact with each other is if you introduce yourself and they ask you, what do you do for a living? You could just say you're an engineer. You know, you'd work in audio or music or whatever, and that's okay. That's cool. And if they ask you specifically anything I've heard of, then you can name some credits. You know, you could do your thing. But if you just walk into a room and they're like, hey, so what do you do? It's like, oh, I engineer for XYZ. I've done this. I've done that. And like, you've said more about your credits than you actually have anything of substance in the conversation. Then, you've gone too far.
Right. So anyway, how you present yourself is not just clothing, but like emotionally, socially as well.
Yeah.
Like real confident mixers, engineers, audio engineers, just people in general, are look steady and like low-key kind of boring. They're not rushed. They're calm. They're cool. They're composed. They're not loud. They're not flashy. There's a book that Leslie Brathwaite loves. He loves this book. I think it's all right. I think it's fine. I think it's a book that presents stable psychological elements in the form of a mystical esoterica. It's called The Four Agreements. It's a really easy read, short book. There's one really good point in that Four Agreements book, which is like, don't take anything personally. And that includes the compliments, right? Like, because if you are taking compliments personally, and this is my own words now, not from the book, then you're accepting validation. And the like having unrecognized need for validation will hurt you. Like, is going to be an issue in the long run. Like, it's okay to want to be validated for your stuff, but not checking it, having not recognized it, not placing it where it needs to be, is going to control you in the future. You need to control your need for validation, or at least be in charge of it, have power over it. So I like that too. Like, those that are really confident that they're doing really well, like, aren't waiting for someone to validate them. They're cool. They're calm. It doesn't matter. They're just moving forward anyway. So they don't take anything.
Funny enough, I'm just imagining somebody where you're like, hey man, that mix was great. And they're like, yeah, that's cool. Whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I do think that there's a lot of stuff about this where it's like kind of low key, like toxic masculinity type David Goggins type advice. But I do think like taking it like a lighter form really works. For example, don't wait, execute is a really good advice for like building confidence. Mm-hmm. Like, don't plan, don't overly plan, just execute. I think like commitment beats feelings, right? Action creates confidence. And then the idea of like no excuses, and I want to dive a little bit deeper than no excuses. It's not about excuses prevent you from taking action, but it's also excuses subconsciously validates your insecurities. You don't realize that it's happening. But when you say, this is hard for me, you're also saying that to yourself. You are saying that it's okay for me because I am fill in the blank. So excuses isn't just like preventing you, like the practical utility of a situation where it's like excuses keeps me from the gym. No, the excuses is you telling yourself that you're not the type of person like you are. You're validating the bad parts of yourself.
Yeah.
You are saying, I can't go today because I am the type of person that is susceptible to this excuse.
Yeah.
Right. It's beyond the actual excuse itself. I think it's really damaging psychologically to the confidence, to the subconscious, to the conscience that we talked about earlier. So yeah.
It's been proven.
Right. Yeah. And I'm not saying, I'm not saying don't make excuses like in this David Goggins Marine, you know, type point.
Be conscious of what you're saying to yourself.
Right. Exactly. That's a better way of saying it. Be conscious of what you're saying to yourself about yourself, even if it's not direct. Like, an excuse is not directly attacking yourself, right? But you are validating something about yourself when you make an excuse. So be careful. I want the one thing that a caveat that I want to say with a lot of nuance here is I don't think faking confidence is bad for the average person.
Oh, hold on. I could speak on that.
I'll say it again. For the average person, I do not think faking confidence is bad. I think faking confidence can be really good for the average person. What do you want to say about that?
So you've heard of the term trial by fire, right?
Yeah, of course.
Trial by fire is probably the most positive outcome-driven approach you can take to something. Reason being is that a lot of times you have that inner voice in your head saying, I'm not really ready for that. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I feel like I could figure it out, but like, and once you hear that little thought, I could figure it out, it's like, dude, trial by fire. Just step in front of it, figure your shit out. It's not go into things recklessly. But I always tell people, like, focus on the fundamentals. It doesn't matter if you got the flashiest gear or not or whatever. If you understand the core basics of audio and how it's meant to move and the different components and blah, 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 you can figure your shit out. I've stepped into more rooms that I, in my head, felt I wasn't ready for, only to prove myself wrong time and time again. Confidence is not something you should necessarily make yourself delusional with, right? And just saying like, oh, you know, it'll be fine, whatever. It's like, dude, you've never worked with this kind of technology or these type of people, blah, 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 in these kind of sessions. Because I've walked into like rooms where like you've got like five massive names and then a room full of massive writers and massive producers and everybody's talking and wants something at the same time. And learning how to manage your thoughts throughout that was like the biggest tool that I had available. It wasn't what mics I wanted to use or what techniques I wanted to use. It was being in control of your own thoughts and process. Like,
right.
At a certain point, jump in. You right. just need to fucking jump in and lock in. And that sounds like the most dude bro YouTube shit ever. But the reality is it's that I've said it a bunch of times. I've been in more rooms that I felt I wasn't ready for only to prove myself wrong, only because I knew I would prove myself wrong.
Right. There is, I want to change the wording from faking confidence to practice in like intentionally practicing confidence.
Yeah.
I think that sounds more intentional because faking confidence is in spite of the lack of, you're just like pretending, you're not being yourself, which goes against what I talked about with like self-conscious, like having, you know, your own conscience.
Being aware of yourself.
Yeah, being aware of yourself. There's the versus like the idea of like choosing to be confident. For example, a client of mine, this is a very common one. Like sometimes it's scary to present my higher tier price to a first time client.
Yeah.
It is scary. And they are likely to reject me if they here just on price alone without giving me a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But you send it anyway and you do not be the first one to discount your price.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a choice and I'm not trying to be manipulative. Like faking confidence sounds manipulative. It sounds like there's like an unchecked ego or unchecked like external motivating factor.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it goes back to this word of like faith and conscience is like choosing confidence in moments when it's scary, when you don't feel like you deserve it necessarily, but you're like, you know, checking those feelings, you're self-aware, and you move forward anyway. And letting other people make that decision for you, I think it's like, it's all right. I think that's okay. There's going to be other times too where, like you said, like you've never done something before, right? And it's scary, right? If it was not scary at all, then that would be like borderline delusion, right?
Yeah.
Like if you've been asked to do something you've never done before and you're going to do the homework, you're ready to do the preparation to get into the room, ask questions, go on YouTube, Google stuff, and you're like going to do it. You're going to prepare for it. Like that's a good telltale sign that you should say yes to something. Again, a bad telltale sign of like, of you having ignorance or being arrogant is saying yes to things you've never done before, not feeling any sort of fear and not doing any sort of homework.
At like that just point, going I think you're psychotic.
Yeah, that's like, that's low key crazy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Like if you're feeling nervous about taking on new opportunities that you've been preparing for, like in behind the scenes, but you've just never walked into the room or been put in that position, congratulations, you're human. That's baseline emotion. I'm sorry to tell you, like, I've been working with the crew that I'm going on tour with for the last 2 years. The show hasn't changed. I mean, you know, shows change, whatever. But like, you know, the team hasn't really changed. Expectations haven't changed and all that. Yet I'm still nervous.
Right.
It's normal to feel nervous. That's okay. But being confident while nervous is pretty common. It sounds weird to say out loud. Like, how can you feel confident and nervous at the same time? You still feel that way. It never goes away. But learning to move through it is part of what builds that confidence. And knowing that at the end of the tunnel, you know, it's like, look, we're going to walk in. For instance, none of the gear is flying with me outside of my mics. So all the show files that I'm preparing are basically going to be loaded up on show one. So I had to know that I'm moving in, knowing that I may have to adapt something on the fly and fix it or something because I didn't get to test it while in the States.
Right.
Confidence is sometimes just moving, knowing that, like, hey, just go with it. Just go with it. If you are confident in your skill, you're still going to be nervous. Things can still go wrong at any point. Things like, I know people who have multiple Grammys that still get plenty of revision requests. It's fine. You're not going to hit it out of the ballpark, even if you are at a really high point in your career.
And the same people, like lots of Grammys that still go through confidence slumps.
Yeah.
Right. So I want to end it with this, like a little bit more of an internal perspective. I'm going to be a little bit, like, I don't want to say vulnerable here, but I'm going to be open about how I'm feeling about this sort of stuff and perceiving like another layer deeper into this. We've talked about mm-hmm. in other episodes, a cognitive bias called the illusion of control. It's that humans mm-hmm. can't have a hard time, naturally have a hard time embracing ambiguity. So they create rituals and mysticism to feel like they have some form of control in something that is naturally ambiguous, right? Like a baseball player mm-hmm. will not step on the foul line. There's like some sort of superstition surrounding it now, right? Or like if you're having a good day, you don't know if your day is going to continue to be good. So you rely on seeing black cats or not seeing any black cats. Like you turn to ritual, superstition, mysticism in to cope with the ambiguity of life, right? This yeah. is one of my big critiques of the existentialist nature of The Alchemist and why I'm not a huge fan of The Alchemist, because you're letting external things determine how you feel about your future through omens. We're not going to talk about that. This is not the philosophy episode. This is the practical episode of building confidence here. I will say there's two things. I think it's fair and fine to find routines and elements and specific parts of your workflow that you determine is part of the reason why you're so great. For example, I've spent tons of time building the acoustics in my room. That's part of the reason why I'm so confident, because I know my room is good, right? That's like mm-hmm. you've spent the time analyzing, scanning, building the acoustic treatment. You have zero guilt. There is nothing dragging your self-conscience because you've taken the time and the effort, the practice to build your room. Now, can you make bad mixes in a good room and good mixes in a bad room? Of course. But there's going to be this small confidence edge having taken the time to do that. Getting really well, like speakers that you've spent a lot of, not just money on, but like time researching, right? And then mm-hmm. spending time in front of those speakers, like listening to music casually or critically and in your mixing position, right? That is going to create some form of, even if it is false or not, this illusion of control. You're going to be like, okay, I've removed some of the variables, the changing variables into, I know my room is good. I know my speakers are good. I know I'm used to my speakers. These are good forms of illusion of control. Bad forms of illusion of control are things that are just straight up lies. For example, I want to be very careful with this because I don't want to call people out. But like something as simple as, I don't have Lynx Aurora converters, so I'm not going to be able to make a hit. Like, or like, yeah. because I have these high-end converters, I'm going to be able to make a hit. Or it's like, my meters have to be on a specific setting in order for it to sound the best. Like, yeah. does that make sense? Like, there's different esoteric concepts that are closer to mysticism than they are based on anything real world. Like, we've even heard, like, I don't like his channel. He's overly cynical and critical. But, like, AP Mastering, like, there's been a couple episodes on his YouTube channel. He's, like, a very cynical, mm-hmm. overly critical mastering engineer that I'm not convinced isn't hyper insecure. But anyway, he has like a couple valid points. Like I think it was it Bernie Grundman? I think it was Bernie Grundman. Like one of the best mastering engineers in the world is straight up convinced that copying and pasting, making duplicate digital audio files degrades the audio quality. And he's like, I can hear when you go to the Finder and you duplicate an audio file, that duplicate, and my clients, and he'll say it in the interview, my clients can hear it too. It sounds worse. There's something missing in a digital audio file.
It's all ones and zeros until it's electronically processed.
That is provably false. Like that is That is nowhere. Like, he is obviously ignorant of how digital audio works.
Yeah, like, just hearing that makes
me.
No.
We don't need to make fun of him. We are on the same page.
No, we're not. It's just such a.
We're on the same page. We don't need to validate each other. That is obviously incorrect. Like, extremely incorrect and very misguided. And that's a bad form of illusion of control, right? Like believing, like, that's based off of feeling superiority off of. I don't know. It's like that. That's like needing to feel superior in order to feel confident, which I think is a bad form of illusion of control. Like, for example, that's part of the reason why a lot of like insecure people will. I don't want to call it gatekeeping because sometimes it's not as intentional as the word implies, right? The word implies that it's very intentional. You're keeping people from knowledge, right? Because of a scarcity mentality.
Or access, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll be honest, like, it's kind of funny because, like, going back to, like, what do, like, engineers look like or successful engineers look like? And when we talk about confidence, I understand where people think gatekeeping is the thing that goes away or it gets more into it. I think that's a very early in career mindset. I think once everybody knows each other, and knows that we all work, and you realize that there's actually a lot more work than any one of us really can take on. Confidence at a high level does not look like gloating or superiority or a rack full of gear. It just looks like you're hanging out with people, and there's no judgment of who's bigger, better, more successful or not. Because I've got plenty of friends who are doing way better than me, and that's great. But I've never felt any level of competition with them.
Right.
And because of that, the friendship and the camaraderie between it feels a lot more natural than I'm only friends with you because you're successful.
You'll actually find the higher up you go that they're all in different group chats and texting each other, like asking for tips, asking for help, and they're openly sharing each other with each other. And then
all the group chats are.
Yeah, cheering each other on, having a good time, maybe like, you know, talking some shit, but it's like all in good fun.
Yeah,
not as a way to practice a feeling of superiority necessarily.
Yeah, I remember I got added to one a while ago where the first thing they asked me is if I was told that I would needed to prepare the lube. And I was very, very excited about that because I knew I had met like-minded people.
Okay.
I was like, nice. All right. I like this chat.
Funny.
Welcome.
Funny. Going back to the preparation builds confidence sort of thing, we are inevitably creatures of habits and cognitive biases, and we will we'll make up the ambiguity that is natural in this world, in this industry, with routine, with mysticism, with superstition, with routine, right? This is how it's going to be. So what I'm suggesting is, alongside the preparation thing, going back to the preparation thing, is that do so with preparation and knowledge through study, through practice, not some esoteric bullshit information, like duplicating digital files, right?
Yeah.
Like do the work. I honestly also feel that, to end it on that note, like there is an air of like needing to feel superior in order to feel confident is also heavy. It's like also a pretty heavy, dark thing. It's a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
If your confidence is based on superiority, that's another thing we need to check. It's another thing we need to check. Because you don't say, like, I can hear stuff that nobody else can. Like, I mean, there are times where, for example, like, I've said that before. Okay, I'm going to walk back on myself on this. Let me think about this out loud real quick.
Sure.
I've taken hearing tests and I can definitely hear higher frequencies than the average person my age. On top of that, I'm young for the level of career that I'm at. But the thing is, like, I don't think that makes me better than another engineer. I think that's more just like a fun fact. I'm not using that as like a foothold for like confidence. Am I being hypocritical, or am I still on the money there?
So I'll say this. I think there's nothing wrong with stating a fact. I think it's different when you use that fact to prove a point.
Right. So if I had said,
using it to prove a point.
If I had said, that's the reason why I'm a better mixer.
That would be the issue. But if you, for instance, I have been very happy with my career on both sides of the spectrum of live and in studio. But because of that, I don't think that I'm a better engineer than the people around me.
Right.
I just think I've gotten really lucky and I appreciate everybody that's gotten me here. But with that said, I don't think I'm superior than you or the next guy.
Right.
But I think it's really weird when people use that same point to say, well, you ain't shit. I am shit. I know what I'm talking about. Look where I am. I think it's okay to point like, hey, if you're looking for advice, I can give you advice. Sure. But if you're not looking for it and I need to assert dominance, that's really weird.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a,
which is why I want to make a YouTube channel called Nobody Asked, but apparently somebody took it already.
There's a Taoist quote from Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu, right? Who says, those who know do not speak. Those who speak do not know.
And that's the end of this podcast. We are ending the series here.
Right. I think, like, for example, there's, I don't know how to say this, dude. Like, there's been times where someone says something like incredibly inappropriate or provably incorrect. Mm-hmm. And I've taken the choice not to like, instead of choosing to correct them, I've taken the choice to just let them talk. Not in like this like being dominated form or like this power thing or like, you know, keeping a power complex to myself, like knowing that I'm better than them and not like giving, sharing that information. But it's like, oh, like, it's like, yeah, no, you know, like, it's all right. Like, he'll figure this out. It's a confidence that like they'll figure this out eventually.
There's going to be moments where you clearly need to help somebody out. For instance, the difference between a 600% decrease and a 98% decrease. But other times I think it's okay to just have people have their own views on things, you know, because there's also a difference between being provably wrong with malice and just being wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's similar to the idea of like the argument of certainty.
Yeah.
Right. Because I mean, Taoism Zen is all about like even Eastern Orthodox Christian is all about embracing ambiguity. And it's the nature, the nature of ambiguity is the nature of the universe, basically. If there's certainty involved, then that is a red flag.
Yeah.
Only a Sith Lord deals in absolutes.
Yes. There's the reference. Yes.
We always say that again. So it's like there is a form of ambiguity and a lot of nuance in all of this. The thing that I wish I heard from people like myself is if I was reading books or listening to podcasts and I was trying to learn something from this experience to make it feel human is the faith aspect. It's not that you don't feel inconfident. It's not that you don't get into slumps. It's not that you don't fake or like choose confidence when it's kind of empty. It's that you do so consciously in the face of those naturally negative feelings.
Yeah.
It's like doing it anyway, even though it's scary. Like, yes, it makes more logical sense. And there might be something that you need to correct with your mixes. If you get 5 rejections in a row, there might be something wrong with your systems. And being open to that, but also realizing if you've done the work and realize that it's not you, it's just a taste alignment thing. Like being able to say, okay, we're on to the next one. Like, keep going. Let us go. Mm-hmm. Even though it's hard to do that. Like being open about the fact that it's hard to do that. That happens to me too. Right? Maybe not 5 in a row, but like, happens often where I get rejected. And that's part of the game, right?
Especially and I hate to say it because this is the ultimate reminder of our specific form of confidence. This is a creative industry with creatives making creative decisions and creative requests on their revisions. You may not agree or understand, and that's kind of the whole fucking point. It's so arbitrary on every level that it's like taking any kind of revision request as a personal attack or anything is such a small dick move that I'm sorry. It's just stop being a bitch and do it. Like at the end of the day, you're being paid to deliver, not to feel a certain way, not to even if you're not confident, deliver. That's how you build confidence. Just fucking turn the project in. Hit send. Fucking put product to market. Like, just do it and watch. You will end up making, let's tie it to money. Let's just tie it to money real quick, because I know money's not the indicator of confidence, because there's plenty of people with no confidence and plenty of money. But if your goal was to say, I want to build a successful career, and you kind of tie it around money, but you're like, well, I can't make money if I don't have a good product. What the fuck is a good product in a creative industry? It's so abstract that there is no such thing as a guaranteed good product. If that was the case, the label industry would be a lot more fucking richer. Just turn your shit in. Just keep moving with confidence, saying, look, I did my best and I'm going to keep doing my best. I'm going to do my best to absolutely show up for this client. And as long as I keep doing that, I will do better. And you'll notice that that batting average of 7 out of 10 are missed, and that's still a good thing, really starts to resonate. It's okay.
Right.
It's all right to fail. Just you're... If you've ever met somebody who never failed once and is successful, they are the fucking anomaly of humankind.
Yeah, they're hiding their failures if they do that.
Yeah.
You can't be good at something without failing a little bit.
Every baby fell when trying to walk.
And there actually has been, like, for example, like, now we're talking on a personal level here. Like, I am naturally extremely athletic. Like, I would... fairly arrogantly so, to prove a point here, I would put myself in easily the top 1%, maybe even the top 0.1% of like natural athleticism of among humans, right? Mm-hmm. I play any sport, I'm immediately good at it. I got into baseball like last year for the first time since like middle school, immediately one of the better ones in the league, right? From an athleticism standpoint, not like I need the practice and the skill. Like, I'm good at baseball. I'm great at playing shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
But even though I've never really struggled because I haven't had enough experience and I'm naturally very gifted at the sport of baseball, there is still a form of insecurity. Like, there is still a form of like, I haven't struggled. I haven't made mistakes. And that means I'm going to make some. Like, the mistakes are inevitable and they're seen as inevitable even to someone that is naturally gifted. So it doesn't actually alleviate confidence in the way that you think it does. Like, there is still some insecurity, even being good and not having, like, not having troubles is a form of trouble, as we know from every single, like, Valley girl and boy. Like,
if you're in a relationship and have not argued once.
No, I mean, think about it. Like, there's been times where, like, in the friend group, you're talking about parent troubles, right, in high school. And then there's one friend's like, I love my parents, and now I feel left out because I've never had bad experiences with them. Like, not having troubles is a trouble,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So again, I don't think that, like, yeah, there is an anomaly of like being naturally gifted at something, but there's no solution. Like, being a child of an extremely wealthy father, like, what happens? There's different problems. You now have super high expectations and shoes to fill, which... And the other part about that is that, and no part of society is ever incentivized to sympathize with you. So not only do you have these high expectations and shoes to fill, but you can't really ask anybody for help or ask for compassion. Where like the average middle class poor person, lower class person, is incentivized and validated for struggling. You won't ever be able to have that luxury if you're born in a wealthy family. So it's just different problems, right?
Yeah, and I hate to say it, but like it really shows like at a later date. You're right. I hate to admit it. If you not to use the phrase in a disregarding way, but like if you were born with a silver spoon, if by a certain point in your career, you haven't really gotten there, but then the guy that wasn't born with a silver spoon did. Like, everybody's applauding the dude and asking, what did you do in the face of adversity, when everybody's adversity is different? But with a silver spoon, yeah, it is quite a bit harder to ask for sympathy. I'm not going to lie. That's something I was never really out loud with, but like thinking about it, I'm like, oh shit. But I was like, now that I think about it, that's pretty out loud. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, think about it. Like, you have the silver spoon, have all the money, and then you see someone that doesn't have anything, and then they pop off like to someone that doesn't have anything, that has no money, that has no resources. Like that's not you don't take that personally, right?
Yeah.
But if you have everything, and you see someone do that. Now it's just like, how do you not take that personal? That's difficult. How do you, like if you have money and if you have unlimited budget, then this happens all the time. We see this all the time in music, right? Like children of wealthy parents or someone that had nothing and got everything, right? I'm not going to talk about specific artists, but like one specific artist is like, I wonder if like one that we've worked with together, like I wonder if Trey Songz struggles to make it, to build any sort of like high level trust relationships. Like there's a lot of people at the top that I can strongly assume have a hard time trusting people because they don't know if the people are trying to being nice to them for their money. And oftentimes the people that are being nice to them don't know themselves if they're being nice and trying to be friendly for their money and influence, right? It's hard.
It's really unfortunate because it's very true. Like,
The point of all this,
those that get to that point also know the amount of confidence they had to build, the systems they had to build, the work they had to do, and everything. And it's so much that,
right. Mm. One of my clients like went through a label thing, got paid out, got a lot of money, didn't perform well into the label, and now they're going through some troubles. Like that's going to affect their, like even though they had everything going for them, that's going to affect how they feel. Anyway, the point of all this isn't to like excuse wealthy people or anything like that. The point is that nobody is exempt from insecurities.
Yeah.
Nobody is exempt from the need to practice. Not anybody is exempt from the need to prepare. That is it. And so everybody's got struggles to do. It's very human to deal with preparation and yourself and confidence, right? So there's no instilled form. I think the only way, and I try to do this too with Kaname, one of the only ways I think is like really practical. I'm sure there's many other ways as a parent. Like, so this is a question that I have. How do I instill confidence in Kaname without making him arrogant, right? And without also, while also maintaining some form of autonomy, like he can still choose, like he has the confidence to be able to be good at something, but still recognize the work of effort. And for us, I've kind of made the conclusion thoughtfully to say genetics. Like, do you think that daddy is hard work, is smart, is doing well? Do you like the way mommy is? If you do, like you are genetically instilled to be greater than me. Like you can be good at baseball. You can be good at reading. You can be good at music. You can be great at art because mommy is an artist. It is already in you. It is in your genetic code to be great. You just have to earn it. Like it is possible. So there's the instilling of confidence through possibility, but not saying that we're superior. It's not a superiority thing, which is a dangerous form of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a form of you need to earn it. You can do it, but you need to put in the effort. Yeah. Practice.
I think it always comes back to like, I think we all want to raise, whether that be your own kid or the family around you, right? To have confidence. But I think we all want to avoid that. Like, no, you're not superior, you little shit. Like, don't get it twisted. Like, that's not what we're trying to teach you. But with hard work, you can do whatever the fuck you want, man.
Right.
Have faith.
That's a difficult barrier too. Is like, for example, like I'm the only creative, and I will go as far as to say generalized to creative. Like I'm the only person in my entire family that I know of that has created, pursued a creative career. And on top of that, doing well enough. Maybe not the best, but well enough, right? And it's been really interesting to me. I've also been very, very lucky. I have no example. I've like, for example, like one of my good friends, his grandpa played MLB baseball. His father played MLB baseball, like big leagues baseball. His brother has played up to AAA. Like practicing baseball, knowing that for two generations that your family has played at the highest level possible makes practice feel different. Like there's like, oh, I can do this. I just need to keep working on it. Right. Because they've done it. I can do it. It's like, it's accessible because you've seen it. Same thing like before I ran 100 miles, I thought that was like a crazy endeavor, like an ultra marathon, 100 mile ultra marathon. And then I met someone that's done it. And there's like this humanizing aspect of like, okay, like he's a normal human being. And then, which in a weird way, it makes it like, okay, I'm also a normal human being. And so like, I can do this too. Like I can do this, like in a healthy way, not like, again, not in a superiority way, right? There's something about that where it's like in the creative field, I've never, and nobody in my family has ever done anything music, has never done anything creative, has even been an entrepreneur really in the same way that I am. And so it's been really weird having to deal with that. I've had moments, luckily I've been so, not arrogant, but like so childlike and spontaneous that I haven't had the time or the place to care so much about it. I just did what I really, really loved. I was hyper aligned with what I do. But I think there's been moments in time where I look back and there's been some fear or lack of confidence because I've never seen anybody do this before.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever even, like, it's, I'm Asian, dude. Like chasing a creative career is like, is a cardinal sin. Like I was supposed to be a doctor or a lawyer, you know? Like I was doing everything wrong against the books. And so there's something about that too. I don't know what I'm trying to say. So I'm losing the point of the episode here.
No. You're good. Because the reality is confidence, we said it early on in the episode, which is it chases you throughout the entire career, no matter how far you go. Like similarly, like in my family, I'm the only one that chose a creative industry. Everything from playing in bands to, you know, getting paid to engineer and now travel and all that stuff, which is great. But like, so is my grandmother's, I think it was her 92nd birthday last weekend. And I was inside my uncle's house and one of my other uncles came by and he's like, "Hey, Louis, so like you still work in music, right?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "If you don't mind me asking," and keep in mind, this is my uncle worked for NASA JPL. Along with like another uncle and all that. Like we've got like, you know, guys that all went like the traditional route and got really good jobs and all that, right? So he's just looking at me and the question was, "What exactly do you do? Like I'm 35 and yet my family doesn't know what I do or how I make money or how it is that I exist. They just see me moving and buying gear and being married and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Nobody in my family can actually relate." And at first I got made, like I said before, I was made fun of for it. We're fucking Mexican. We bust each other's balls. That's what we fucking do. All right. If you're not busting each other's balls, you're not my friend. All right. Like if I can't talk shit with you, then are we really friends? Come on. But with that said, by the way, so I don't talk shit to all my friends, but like, you know, we're really good friends if we can talk shit with each other. But when my uncle asked, I also had like a funny time having to sit there and be like, "Well, I mean, I've designed studios for big names. I've even for TV networks at this point. I've traveled the world engineering. I've earned some awards. I've done blah, blah, blah. But the only thing that could come out of my mouth is like, well, I'm an engineer like you, but in a different sense, just audio. So people trust me to work on things that they don't fully understand about the audio side of things of their work, and I make it happen. You know, that's the best way I can describe it without giving you a long list of things that I've done for the last 15 years. But yeah, never had anybody in my family that I could ever talk to about like, what should I do? How should I go about this? Like, what advice do you have? Like, and it's always nerve-wracking to ask other people in the industry because you never want to be seen as less than or whatever, at least early on. Later in your career, you learn that everybody's asking the same advice, but everybody's too nervous to ask it early on. And then there's this like little fucking tunnel the size of a straw of confidence that you're trying to build up. And it takes a lot of work, man. Like it really does. But at a certain point, you can kind of learn to have confidence in keeping in your path, just moving and knowing that almost with blind faith that it's going to work out. As long as you keep doing what you're supposed to be doing and you treat your clients right, you be honest with them as much as you can, because once again, sometimes we're going to be wrong. You know, and we're going to get called out on it, and that's okay. But as long as you do things with the right intentions and you keep to your path, it will work out. Right. It may be not at the same timeline as your friends, but I can provably say it will work out.
There's like a paradoxical truth among the things that we're talking about there. So for one solution, I would say is that if you focus on having fun, and if this is truly what you're meant to do, you'll naturally mm-hmm. gain experience. You'll naturally ask a lot of questions, talk to people, right? Like, I think at the best, most childlike, spontaneous moments of my career is, even though I've never seen anybody do this, there's reason for lack of confidence. I've moved through confidently because I love what I do. There is this alignment to the thing that I do, this passion, this commitment to the craft, right? And I love that. And we lose that here and there. We're not going to talk about that separate conversation. So that's one way. But on the other end, there's going to be slumps, right? There's going to be slumps where you're wondering mm-hmm. if this is the right path for you, but you still do it anyway. So both are true, depending on the time. Like, just focus on doing the best work possible, loving what you do, having fun, enjoying the process. And when you're finding yourself losing those moments, if you've done the work to, like, because I think that's also part of the confidence too. Like, I've gone through many, many slumps of wondering if I should just get a regular job, of wondering, like, is this really the path for me? And I've gotten through every single one of those slumps. And me overcoming every single one of those slumps also adds a form of confidence. So the other advice is true. Like, if you're not feeling that way, I'm not going to be the one to determine if this is for you or not for you. It's up to you to determine, is the effort worth it? Is the effort of overcoming the slump worth it? And that's something you need to do, because if you can overcome that slump, that will turn into confidence. And it's also completely acceptable to be like, this isn't for me, and to move on. Mm-hmm. I have bigger things to think about. I have a family and children to think about, right? I think that's fair. So I'm not here to say that there is like a correct answer to all of this, but there is a natural paradoxical truth within everything that we talked about today.
Yeah.
I think that's a good way to end this episode. Also, I'm getting like, the video is getting like overly bright and I'm getting whitewashed out of my own screen as the sun comes out a little bit more. Anyway, thank you so much for listening to the podcast. This podcast is sponsored by us, Sweetwater, Latin Audio, just all ThioPass, all the sponsors. Just go to mixingmusicpodcast.com mm-hmm. to check out our sponsors list for potential discounts on gear, you know, even auto-tune. Mm-hmm. As well as if you would like more episodes and ad-free episodes, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access to our Patreon. There's some free stuff for unpaid, like free Patreon users, like PDF of like mix preps and stuff like that. Some stuff that Lou's template is free if you just join the Patreon for the free tier. But if you join the paid tier, which I think is $4 a month, you get access to 250 exclusive episodes that have not been released to the public, as well as ad-free episode from here on out of the regular podcast. So if you're interested in that, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. All right. I think that's it. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you're serious about getting better at mixing and producing, this is for you. Our Patreon gives you access to weekly ad-free technical episodes, plus a library of over 250 past episodes packed with mixing, mastering, and production knowledge you won't find anywhere else. Don't miss out. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start learning today.